it's a just real nightmare, man. And the fact that it's bankrupting so many people, harming people's health. And I would say it's one of those major psychological stressors. Like when people aren't, they don't have enough health insurance or they don't have the right kind of health insurance. You're like, you can't even live, right? You're scared to get in the car or go on a jog. I mean, it just...
And it hits you when you're already down most right. of the time. Right. Or you've had a healthcare issue and then it whacks you because now not only do you have a healthcare issue, you have a financial issue.
Right.
Right. Which are two of probably the most important things in your life, all happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And so, it's a tremendous problem that we think with this structure, you know, solves a lot of that.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the What is Money Show. I am thrilled to have you here joining me on my mission to help shine light on the corruption of money. Now, if this is your first time listening to the What is Money Show, I strongly recommend that you go back to episodes 1 through 9 first, which lays a lot of the groundwork for many of the concepts that we explore on the show. These first 9 episodes are my series with Michael Saylor, and thousands of people have told me that this is the best podcast series they've ever heard, hands down, and that it was instrumental to their understanding of money and Bitcoin. So if you're looking to start a deep dive into the nature of money, I don't think there's any place better that you can start other than episode 1 of this show. Now, a little bit about this show and how it makes money. The What is Money Show is 100% sponsor-based, so all of our revenues are derived from direct sponsorships. And I strive to be very selective about the sponsors that I work with, specifically only using sponsors that I use personally, and also choosing sponsors that have values which are well aligned to the values expressed on this show, such as freedom, education, self-sovereignty, etc. So what I'm going to do now is a few ad reads right at the top of the show, and then I'll do a few more ad reads in the middle. And I hope you'll take the time to listen to them, as again, these are hand-selected sponsors, and I think you'll like what they have to offer.
Today's podcast is brought to you by N. Wolf's Clothing. Wolf is the first startup accelerator dedicated exclusively to the Bitcoin Lightning Network. 4 times per year, Wolf brings teams from around the world to New York City to work with like-minded entrepreneurs, pushing the boundaries of what's possible with Bitcoin and Lightning. The program is designed to help early-stage companies achieve product-market fit, develop their brand, secure early-stage funding, and grow businesses that help fuel the global adoption of Bitcoin. So go to wolfnyc.com to learn more about the program or apply. Again, that's WolfNYC, WOLFNYC.com. Andy Schoonover, welcome back to the What is Money Show.
Thanks for having me, man. Good to be here.
It's nice to have you. We're sitting here in person this time. We're in Miami. Bitcoin 2023 starts tomorrow.
Let's do it.
We've got Thank God for Bitcoin going on yesterday and today. I know you're participating in that after this. Just by way of quick introduction, you are the CEO of Crowd Health. What are you guys doing over at Crowd Health?
Yeah, you know, I know we talked a little bit about this last time around, but we're really trying to disrupt the way that we pay for healthcare. You know, it's one of those things where healthcare, health insurance is, I think, the third most hated industry. I think Gallup did a poll 2 or 3 years ago, and it was, I think it was government, pharma, health insurance. And so I'm not sure how that's changed over the last 3 years. The government hasn't served us very well. Pharma surely isn't serving us well, and health insurance hasn't either. And so, you know, everybody hates their health insurance.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can we do this better? And in fact, I got a note from one of our fellow Bitcoiners, Matt Snow, yesterday, who works for Trammell Venture Partners. And he's like, dude, I can't believe this. I'm in a doctor's facility and each doctor is a part of a different network. I don't know which ones I can go to and I can't go to, you know? And I was like, imagine an anesthesiologist when you're sitting there at the hospital that's in network, but the anesthesiologist who, you know, just puts you under so you have no idea what's going on is out of network. And it's like the craziness of this health insurance world is impacting tons of people.
Yeah.
You had 250,000 people last year go bankrupt.
Wow.
Due to medical events, even though they had health insurance.
You know, wow.
So they have health insurance and they're going bankrupt. So there's a massive problem out there. And we can talk, we're going to talk about this a little later probably, but it's a $4.6 trillion industry.
That's 25% of US GDP?
Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's bigger than the GDP of every country on the planet except China, the United States, and Japan.
Wow.
Our healthcare system. Wow. And so something's got to be done here. We're just screwing a lot of money by being massively inefficient in the way that we pay for healthcare. And so we're trying to change that, utilizing Bitcoin in many ways.
Yeah.
So we're fired up about it.
That's really cool. Yeah, this is one of those areas where we often say Bitcoin fixes this, but unless you're really down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, I don't know that you actually respect how far that goes, because this is a consequence of fiat, right? Largely, this broken healthcare system. There's a chart that comes to mind for me here. The ratio of administrators to healthcare providers since 1971, and the ratio has exploded, like it's 1,000x administrators per healthcare provider. So it's just all this bureaucratic bloat in the system, and it has to do with the excess of state interference and regulation and all of these things. Sure. So, and people, and it's affecting health outcomes and the quality of healthcare, right? People are, not only are prices going up, but quality is going down. And so we got to make a move, right? We got to get back to something that works.
The graph you're referencing, by the way, is almost unbelievable.
It is actually unbelievable.
It is flat in terms of the number of doctors.
Mm. Yep.
And the amount, number of administrators goes like
vertical. Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, most doctors have about 3 admins per doctor, and that is primarily to bill health insurance.
Yeah.
And so it is a super inefficient way. So it's 30%, 40% of cost, something like that, is just the bill. Whereas, you know, if you were just to go up and say, hey, I'm going to pay in cash like we do for everything else, our buying habits, I'm going to pay in cash, I'm going to pay with a credit card, whatever it is, it's 1 or 2% versus 30 or 40. And that would be ripping $1 trillion basically of costs out of the system and dramatically change the budget for the U.S. government. Yeah. You know, we wouldn't be having to print all this money if we were able to do that. I mean, this impacts so much of our economy that people just don't even think about it.
Yeah, it's another consequence of the central planning of money.
Yeah.
Not something that's intuitive or obvious necessarily, but it's there. Just a personal anecdote here. One of the most frustrating things I've had with my health experiences is you go in to get a certain procedure done or whatever the thing the doctor says you need done, and you say, okay, well, how much is that going to cost me? And they'll tell you, well, we can't tell you how much it's going to cost you until we bill your insurance. And I'm like, okay, well, go ahead and bill my insurance and tell me how much it's going to cost. And they say, well, we can't bill your insurance until after we perform the procedure. I'm like, so you're telling me you want me to agree to have this thing done that you can't tell me how much it costs until after I have the thing done?
It's preposterous.
Preposterous. There's no other word for it. It's like, how can I engage in a consensual trade with you when you can't tell me what the price is?
It's like the lawn mowing guy comes and mows your lawn, and then it comes later and you ask how much is it going to cost. Like, I can't tell you until after I mow your lawn.
Yeah.
He comes and he's like, it's $5,000. You're like, hold on.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't make any sense. But the way that the system is set up, you and I have very little incentive to figure out what the price is because we're ultimately not paying for it. Mm-hmm. Somebody else.
That's right.
Third party corporate entity is the payer in that situation. And so there's no incentive to go and let the free market work to reduce those prices.
Right.
You just flip down an insurance card, the health insurance plan pays it or maybe doesn't.
And maybe it doesn't. Cases,
and you don't find that until you get something in the mail that says, you know, your explanation of benefits is what it's called. How much the insurance company paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I joke that I live in Texas. There's 2 pieces of mail I don't like. One is my property taxes, because I have no idea how much those are going to be. And the second is something from an insurance plan, because you're like, okay, I just went in and had something happen. I don't know if I owe $5, $500, or $5,000.
Yeah.
You know, or in some cases, $50,000.
Yeah.
And that's just the craziness of our health system. Is there is no incentive for me and you to really care until later.
Right.
Right. Which is a high time preference approach to healthcare.
Yeah.
Put down the insurance card now, figure it out later.
And is
it's
it,
just a,
and is it
awful this, way of doing it.
The opposite of the purpose of insurance is like I'm paying a fixed amount to know that I can avoid the uncertainty of costs effectively. Like, of course, there are ranges, right? That's what the deductible is supposed to be. But now it's gotten to the point where you literally just have no idea. Like, I can go in and plop down the insurance card. They may or may not pay it. I may or may not get a bill for $5,000, $10,000, $50,000 3 months later. It's like it defeats the whole purpose of being insured, really. What are you guys doing differently? Like, what is, and I think we should unpack the business model of CrowdHealth, because it's not health insurance. It's something
totally
very different. So can you just like slowly walk us through how this thing works and how it's different from traditional health insurance?
Yeah, sure. So for traditional health insurance, you're paying a premium every month. It goes into this, you know, big pile of fiat at a health insurance company. They use that money to pay your bills. And then for if you're out of network or in network and you have deductibles and copays, they figure that all out on the back end. We do it totally different. We charge you $175 a month. And 50 of that goes to us as our subscription fee. That's our only revenue source. The remaining 125 can be used to help other people in the community with their health bills.
Uh-huh.
So if Robert broke his arm and it's $5,000, then we would go around to, you know, 100 people and ask them for $50, and they would send that money directly to Robert. He would have it in his account. So then he could go and pay in cash at the point of care for his broken arm.
Mm.
And that all happens within a day or two
mm-hmm.
that crowdfunding happens. So instead of plunking down an insurance card, you plunk down your Visa or MasterCard or whatever, and it's paid immediately. That doctor gets paid immediately, which they love. And as a result of that, they're giving us way better prices.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to pay for that infrastructure of health insurance plans. So for bills greater than $1,000, we're getting somewhere around 60% better pricing than a health insurance plan would get for the same procedure.
Wow.
Which we then pass that directly on to our members.
Mm.
And so that's how that works. And in essence, it's kind of a peer-to-peer funding of our health bills, as opposed to having a health insurance plan, you know, sitting between us.
Yeah.
So I got a joke. It's kind of back to the future.
Right.
For hundreds, if not thousands of years, if somebody in our community got hurt, we would all gather around them and help them. And we would take personal responsibility for that person in our
mm-hmm.
in our community. Whereas, you know, in the 1970s, and we were talking about this before we started, mm-hmm. a lot of crap went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance companies and the government gotten in between me and you, so I no longer feel responsible for my neighbor.
Right.
I just say, oh, you know, the insurance company's got it, or the government's got it, or
right.
whatever. This totally changes that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a peer-to-peer funding of each other's healthcare expenses, which takes out a ton of the inefficiencies in that system.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it's a radically new business model.
Because yeah, nobody's doing this.
No one
this
else is doing
totally
this.
Different. Yeah.
But it does mirror like the old way of doing things
yeah.
where, you know, if someone got hurt in the local community, you know, typically through the church, people would kind of crowdsource some funds and then, you know, pay for the procedure or whatever needed to be done to help the person out.
Yeah, exactly. What we also do is we help people find really great doctors mm-hmm. in their area. You know, health insurance plans, they have networks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we talked about this a little bit the last time I was on, but those networks are, you have to go to somebody in that network
mm-hmm.
or you're out of network and you have to pay, you know, mm-hmm. a lot more. And the problem with these networks is that the prices for those docs in network are actually a lot higher than mm-hmm. if you were to pay them in cash.
Right.
So we strip out all of those networks, and you can go to whatever doctor you want to go to. Mm-hmm. If you want us to help you find a doc, you know, because we like sending them to independent docs, not private equity owned,
mm-hmm.
not big hospital system owned. And they're the ones that are more appreciative of being, you know, taking cash, and we'll give you bigger discounts for that. So we can find you a really great doctor in Austin, Texas, who will do your ACL repair mm-hmm. or whatever it may be. So we help those people. And the interesting thing about what we are doing in our incentives versus a health insurance plan's incentives is we have an incentive to find you a really great doctor for a really great price and fight for you that bill to get paid.
Right.
Insurance plans have these big networks and will fight like hell to keep from having to pay that bill.
Right.
Right. So we have a principal agent problem where,
yes,
you know, the insurance company is supposed to be our agent,
yeah,
to help us, you know, negotiate these prices really lower, mm-hmm, and to fight for us on our behalf to, mm-hmm, get these bills paid. But in fact, it's the exact opposite,
right,
of that. They're actually fighting to pay our, yeah, bills, because the difference between how much money they take in and how much money they pass out is profit.
Right.
And so they have every incentive in the world to not pay the bills.
That's right.
We have every incentive in the world to make sure that those bills get crowdfunded. Because if Robert Breedlove has an issue and you're a member of Crowd Health, and we're appreciative of that, and you don't get your bill paid, you can go on Twitter to your hundreds of thousands of followers and say, this Crowd Health is, you know, a joke because they couldn't get my bill,
right,
paid. Right. So we will fight with you, be your ally,
yeah,
walk alongside you. In fact, if you go to Twitter, you know, most people are like, man, I can't believe, like, I feel so cared for,
mm-hmm,
because our incentive system is different.
Yeah.
You know, the only way we make money is a subscription fee. And so we have every incentive to keep you as a member and for you to say great things about us, that you can attract more people to,
yeah,
Crowd Health. Like, the incentives are totally aligned as opposed to this screwed up healthcare system, health insurance system.
And that's where the ethos of Bitcoin shines,
yeah,
the company, absolutely, too. It's just an alignment of incentives. And the adversarial thing, I mean, that's why they're overcharging in the first place, right? These providers are charging health insurance companies so much more because they know the health insurance company is going to pay them a fraction of what they charge.
Totally.
And then to the extent the health insurance company cannot underpay the doctor, they'll also pass some of that cost back to the consumer, as I said, 3 months later with a bill. You know, this was not an approved procedure,
exactly,
or whatever. It's a just real nightmare, man. And the fact that it's bankrupting so many people, harming people's health. And I would say it's one of those major psychological stressors. Like, when people they don't have enough health insurance, or they don't have the right kind of health insurance, you're like, you can't even live, right? You're scared to get in the car or go on a jog. I mean, it just...
And it hits you when you're already down most,
right,
of the time.
Right.
You've had a healthcare issue, and then it whacks you because now not only do you have a healthcare issue, you have a financial issue,
right?
Right, which are two of probably the most important things in your life, all happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And so, it's a tremendous problem that we think with this structure, you know, solves a lot of that.
So we touched on that. This is kind of a consequence of fiat. Again, not an obvious one. We talk a lot on this show about 1971, obviously,
yeah,
going off the gold standard. You brought up earlier the HMO Act, which was also in the early 70s, I believe.
1973, yeah.
How did that, what is that, and how did it contribute to us getting to this totally screwed up form of health insurance we have today?
Yeah, up until the 1950s, 60s, it was more of a mutual aid type of situation, mm-hmm, where a bunch of people got together, primarily through the church, as you mentioned, mm-hmm, and they would just help each other. There'd be a little bit more infrastructure around helping each other.
Mm-hmm.
The 1970s, 1973, the HMO Act basically put into law our current system of large organizations having these big networks that we then have to go to be able to get care, right? And the thought there was, like, well, these big health insurers could negotiate down our prices. But in fact, what has happened, if you look at the graph since 1973, prices have, you know, gone vertical, like we've, mm-hmm, like you said before, creating a bunch of craziness in that system.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, similar to the time that the dollar was depegged from gold, you know, the health insurance plans came into existence. So all the large health insurance plans, Aetna, United, mm-hmm, Cigna, all came into existence right around 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that basically put into law what we are currently seeing now 50 years later.
Wow. And yeah, I think an H, I don't know exactly, but...
Health maintenance organization is what HMO is.
What, yeah, we know them in the U.S. is, like, you just want to avoid HMOs, basically, yeah, right?
And most people are like, HMO, PPO, all these things. It's crazy town where we're using all these acronyms that nobody really understands about their healthcare. It's about their healthcare, right? Yeah. Things that we should understand, things that we should take personal responsibility for. We are outsourcing to a big corporation that could really care less.
Right, right. I was a CFO for a number of years, so we were a sophisticated buyer of these plans for our hundreds of employees. It's probably the most complicated thing that most complicated purchasing decision I had to make was figuring out the right health plan.
Yeah.
If you've ever looked at these things side by side and it's just maddening. And I assume that's by design, just trying to be opaque and complicated, but.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things here. One is it was built on a B2B type of relationship. Mm-hmm. This is really a industry between the hospital systems and the insurance companies, mm-hmm. with us as the consumers as just being almost a nuisance, mm-hmm. as a part of that system. And so there is no direct consumer kind of component to this. And so they're making it confusing because it's a B2B relationship, mm-hmm. that they just have not presented in a consumer, you know, friendly way.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the primary reason for why it's so confusing. But they're trying to make people confused. And, you know, if people are confused, then they're kind of like, okay, well, I'll guess I'll just pay it. You know, I went to Stanford for business school. I was talking to my buddy the other day who graduated second in our class. And he's like, there is nothing in this world that makes me feel like an idiot like health insurance.
So true.
You know, it's like you can read through the 140 pages of your member guide, mm-hmm. and you're like, what the hell did I just read? You know, you have no idea what you're reading.
Yeah.
And this is health insurance. This is your second biggest expense. It's the most important thing in your life, your healthcare.
Yeah.
So, you know, ours is like 10 pages and it's, you know, jokes throughout. And like, we want you to be okay with understanding how this all works.
Yeah.
You know, maximum transparency is possible.
That's so good.
So it's a totally different way of looking at this.
That's super cool.
Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, the Gold Investment Letter. The Gold Investment Letter helps sophisticated investors navigate capital markets and maximize their profits in trading gold, silver, and mining stocks. The Gold Investment Letter seeks out the most undervalued companies and identifies special situations in the mining sector, and then provides in-depth analysis on both their financial positions and future prospects. The Gold Investment Letter explores many complex domains, such as investor psychology, portfolio management, and macroeconomic trends, all with the goal of making you a better investor. The Gold Investment Letter offers a free version and a paid premium version. And I strongly recommend you at least sign up for the free version, because after having read a few of these issues, I can promise you it is a treasure trove of good information. You can sign up for the free newsletter today at goldinvestmentletter.com. Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, iCoin Technology. iCoin has just released a sleek new hardware wallet. Looks like a mini iPhone, a little touchscreen and camera on it. The device has no Wi-Fi, no cellular connection, no GPS. It's a strictly physically cold hardware wallet. Like I said, it's got a high-res 3-inch touchscreen. It's got a camera for air-gapping the wallet. It's got optional Bluetooth compatibility. And it's a brand new UI, UX experience for a hardware wallet, making it very accessible, easy to use, not intimidating. And as we always talk about on this show, the only way you can truly own your Bitcoin is by having it in self-custody. So you need a device like iCoin Wallet to truly own your Bitcoin. Go to iCoinTechnology.com today and use promo code Bitcoin23 for 30% off of this new sleek hardware wallet. Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is a Bitcoin-enabled alternative to legacy health insurance. Now let's face it, legacy health insurance is an absolute scam. Nobody can explain this better than the legendary comedian Chris Rock.
Insurance. You got to have some insurance. You got to. That's an insurance. They shouldn't even call it insurance. They should just call it in case shit. Like, I give a company some money in case shit happens. Now, if shit don't happen, shouldn't I get my money back?
So with CrowdHealth, instead of just paying premiums that you'll never see again,
You can hold part of this pool of savings in dollars and in Bitcoin through CrowdHealth. And when you have a health event, you can draw against this pool of communal savings. So go to joincrowdhealth.com/breedlove to learn more or sign up.
Now let's talk a little bit about how you guys, obviously you have the ethos of Bitcoin with the incentive alignment, the transparency, all of these other things we're talking about. What are you doing to actually use Bitcoin, the technology? I know perhaps you're doing some of your payments and some of the member contributions that you maintain a pool of, maybe some of that is in Bitcoin, but I think you're doing some things on the Lightning Network as well.
Yeah.
How do you guys embrace background Bitcoin?
Because we had kind of built this outside of the Bitcoin, but I was having lunch with Jimmy Song, who I know you know. And you know, he was saying, you know, these insurance companies have this big pool of fiat, and it's with 7, 8, 9% inflation, CPI, right? We all know it's probably higher than that. But you know, that pool of fiat's value is going down month by month, mm-hmm. day by day, really. And you know, with the kind of chronic inflation, systemic inflation within healthcare, those two things compound each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're seeing, especially now. I think this year was like 20% on average increases in health insurance premiums.
Wow.
And it's supposed to be worse next year. And so he's like, well, why don't you allow people to hold some of that in Bitcoin?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so giving somebody a Bitcoin alternative to the money they're currently paying in was interesting to me. I'm a Bitcoiner. And so we started it that way. You know, the challenge with that has been that with the banking regulations over the last couple of years, especially on the custodial side, which is what we were using,
mm-hmm.
we were using, you know, Prime Trust. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they lost Texas, they lost New York, they lost North Carolina, they lost a bunch of these states, which were big states for us. And so We're now starting to think about, like, how do we debank our healthcare?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're looking at doing, and you know, would love your feedback on this, and we're actually looking for feedback from other Bitcoiners, is saying, can we replicate what we're doing completely over the Lightning Network?
Mm-hmm.
And so you would pay us over Lightning, you would pay each other over Lightning. And then ultimately what we'd love to do is we'd love to pay the docs in Lightning so that we can have this, you know, circular Bitcoin economy starting to be presented. Like we mentioned earlier, this is $4.6 trillion. If we can get Bitcoin to be more pervasive in the payment structure of how we do healthcare, then we think the use case for Bitcoin goes up.
Sure.
The value of Bitcoin goes up to everybody. And I think that's one of the rips that people have against Bitcoin is like, oh, well, it's great, but it's, you can't use it anywhere. You know, it's like, if we can use it within the healthcare system, the largest industry on the planet, probably,
mm-hmm.
You know, that totally crushes that. And it creates a way better, more efficient payment system on our end. So
yeah,
that's what we're looking to do with Lightning.
Yeah. I like the idea too. I mean, because part of what you're doing here is driving your members toward more free market healthcare provisioning of services, right? Away from these large hospital systems that are going to be mired in regulations and administrators and inefficiencies. Yeah. And you're actually sending them to doctors that are entrepreneurial, I guess, for lack of a better term, that they're lean, they're mean, they're providing good value for the prices charged. And I think those people would obviously be very willing to embrace Bitcoin, just given it's kind of like money optimized for entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense. And then the circularity factor is nice too, because if you're never selling the Bitcoin, well, that's just more reservation demand for the Bitcoin and more number go up, as we say.
Yeah. And we have now about 3,500 folks who are part of CrowdHealth, mm-hmm. Maybe just shy of 4,000 in there. Mm-hmm. If we had those people going to their doctors and saying, you know, will you accept Bitcoin?
Right.
And we start orange pilling the medical community,
mm-hmm.
I think there's a movement there. And so that's what I'm really excited about, is let's orange pill as many people as possible. Yeah. And you know, maybe it's 1 or 2 or 3 or 4% of our transactions to start. But, you know, and we'll report this, you know, mm-hmm. hopefully it's 7% the next year and 10% the next year. And it's like, we're all in this for the long game.
Yeah.
You know, I truly believe that we can make an impact on the usefulness of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You know, the use cases of Bitcoin through healthcare.
Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of just my small you know, in my world, but I get doctors all the time contacting me and saying, hey, will you pay us in Bitcoin? Mm-hmm. Or can you get us more Bitcoiners to come to come to us? I'll give you a discount
right.
if you pay in Bitcoin. And a lot of the Bitcoiners want to go to Bitcoin docs.
For sure. Because
they think about the world and our healthcare
yes.
way differently than the medical industrial complex.
Yes.
That wants to put pharma on us, that wants right. to, you know, still go by the food pyramid,
right.
by all of these things that are old school ways of looking at our health, whereas these Bitcoin docs are like, no, we think about this differently.
Mm-hmm.
Let's you know, I went to a cardiologist the other day. All's good, no problems. But, you know, he's like, oh, you know, I see your cholesterol is high. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm primarily keto. And he's like, oh, well, you need to, you know, stop eating red meat because that's inflammatory and that's going to lead to heart attacks. And I'm like, and I'm out of here. Right. And I was like, and we have people all the time being like, can you find us more Bitcoin docs? Yeah. And if we put this out there that we're looking for them, then man, that could be value added in itself.
For sure.
And so you'll see that over the next 30 days, we're going to start building a database of Bitcoin docs. That people can go to. And I think you'll get better healthcare as a result of it.
Yeah, I keep saying this about Bitcoin events. Like, it's one of the most enjoyable experiences for me to come and interact with Bitcoiners. And I think it's because as a Bitcoiner, you automatically know if I'm sitting across a table or meeting a new person that just says they're a Bitcoiner, you know that we're ethically, morally aligned, probably aligned on nutrition, probably aligned on traditional values, things like this. So there's this automatic camaraderie between Bitcoiners, and they also typically happen to be very smart in their own niche of whatever they work on. So there's always like good stimulating conversation. There's a lot of value to that, right? Rather than trying to like get to know someone and making small talk, and then you have to learn that your doctor thinks that steak is inflammatory or whatever before you're like out of there.
Yeah.
Just if you know they're a Bitcoiner, they're probably okay with like traditional ancestral diets,
sure.
something like that.
It's like seeing the pretty girl at church. You're like, you know, like, hey, I know at least the basics are
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so similar, right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, church provided that actually,
yeah, exactly.
right?
Yeah. And the back in the day, that's what church provided.
Yeah.
So yeah, I 100% agree with you. And then think about that and take it one step farther, which is, you know, our Bitcoin community will fund each other's healthcare expenses.
Yeah.
And so if you have a group of people who are acting in a way, most likely, that is aligned with the way that you would act when it comes to your healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
You take care of your body, you eat the right things, you know, those types of just characteristics, your healthcare expenses are going to be lower
right.
than a fiat healthcare
right,
system
right, right.
where, you know, 70% of the American public are overweight.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's something like 58 or 59% are obese.
Yeah.
And so you are helping other people in the Bitcoin community with their healthcare expenses. So we get almost no illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, you know, face plants on mountain bikes,
yeah.
it's skiing injuries, it things like that.
Adrenaline junkie injuries.
Yeah, exactly. Which in the grand scheme of things aren't that expensive.
Yeah.
And so it's cool, and that's why we're able to keep our you know, pricing so low.
Yeah.
Is you're helping other people who don't look like you, but you know, like well, fit, physically fit,
yeah.
take care of themselves.
Yeah, there's a you're not going to get as much metabolic sickness
exactly.
and all the stuff you get from the SAD, the standard American diet, SAD,
yeah.
that's what causes most of the disease, as far as I can tell. I mean, I'm relying on experts here like Carnivore MD, my buddy Paul
yeah,
Saladino,
sure.
he's always, you know, inflammation, too much sugar, all of these things are like primary contributors to basically every major pathology in the U.S. And
80% of our chronic diseases are directly from nutrition.
From diet, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, doctors are not trained in nutrition at medical schools.
Yeah.
You know, I had a tweet the other day where I went on Harvard's medical school's list of classes, mm-hmm. and there was one for nutrition, and it was all about how to cook.
Wow.
And it was mostly plant-based, which is, you know, fine. I'm not going to rip on the plant-based folks, but like, you know, that's the nutrition that they got at Harvard. And somebody actually responded to my tweet, and they're like, it's actually good that they didn't get trained in nutrition, mm-hmm. because the nutrition they would have gotten trained in would be all fiat
nutrition.
You know, nutrition anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the American Heart Association has said that, you know, fatty foods creates, you know, leads to heart attacks. Mm-hmm. They've done that for 50 years. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine them having to come back and say, we were wrong.
Yeah.
We, with our human nature, are not very good at saying we were wrong.
Right.
Right. And so it's nearly impossible for a big organization like that, that is funded in part by mm-hmm. pharma, to come back and say, we were wrong.
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And drugs like Lipitor and these other things are like their number one revenue driver.
It's statins, which is cholesterol lowering drug,
right.
is the most profitable pharmaceutical ever to be created.
Yeah.
You know, and a bunch of us are on it.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, it's this medical industrial complex, not too dissimilar from, you know, the industrial complexes of the past, including the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
They're all in they're the number one funder lobbyists. They're the number one funder of campaigns. They're the number one, you know, funder of some of these big, you know, healthcare organizations, American Diabetes Association, same thing. Right.
Yeah. Which is all obviously diet driven.
It's so obviously diet-driven, yet they have now categorized it as a chronic illness.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, this is not a chronic illness. This is a bad nutrition has led to you, for 95% of the people, 1% is type 1 diabetics, which is just you were born with this most likely, and your body is not be able to create insulin. That's a totally different thing. Type 2 is all nutrition.
Yeah.
And so that can be reversed.
Yeah.
And here's the crazy stat. $1 out of $4 in the United States medical system, healthcare system, is spent on diabetics. So over $1 trillion spent on diabetics, all of which, or the vast majority of which, can be reversed or not have happened if you had better nutritional guidance.
Wow.
So
that's back to the food pyramid.
Yeah, back to the pyramid.
Yeah.
And so that's how pervasive pharma, these big, you know, healthcare organizations, the American whatever association, heart, diabetes, whatever it be, are so impactful on our healthcare and are bringing our economy down, which leads us back to the overprinting of money and the need for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, it's all a circular, you know, conversation here.
Yeah, it's so fascinating how you wouldn't think money would cause so many changes, but you see, like, Bitcoiners are proof, essentially. You see Bitcoiners getting into Bitcoin, and then they get into ancestral diets, and they get into traditional values, and they just lead healthier, happier lives overall. And it's a fascinating phenomenon, honestly. Now, you
walking through this conference, you see people that look very, very different from, you know, any other conference that I've been to. And yes, there are some that are, for whatever reason, are not nutritionally healthy. But I mean, it is the average here is. The BMI average here, I would say, is significantly lower
for sure.
than the national average.
Yeah.
And a part of it, too, is probably just like, you know, there's not a public shaming, but there's just an expectation. If you're in the Bitcoin community, be like,
proof of work.
Take care of yourself, man. Like, even if I go to a Bitcoin dinner, I'm like, I'm going to have steak.
Yeah, it really is a proof of work thing. And
it is.
You know, doesn't mean you have to like work out and get in good shape, but it's like, just take care of yourself basically. And you are your own responsibility,
which is personal responsibility.
Exactly. And that's something Bitcoin teaches us deeply.
Yeah, for sure.
You did something really cool, actually. This was maybe 6 months ago. You were having actually some health events.
Yeah.
And you walked through the entire journey kind of in the public eye on Twitter. And you were also going through your own crowd health, using crowd health basically to go through that.
Yeah.
Can you, if you don't mind, sorry to put you on the spot about this, maybe just tell us a little bit about what happened, you know, how you used crowd health to deal with it, and then what kind of your experience was.
Yeah, sure. So I was having chest pains, and you know, chest pains is not something you mess with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to, as a part of crowd health, you get access to unlimited virtual primary care.
Mm-hmm.
So I logged in, I talked to a doc, and I said, hey, man, I got chest pains. And he's like, you should definitely go see a cardiologist. You know, he walked me through, like, do you feel shortness of breath and things? Mm-hmm. None of that stuff I had, but he's like, you know, just to make sure. So that was free for me as a member of Crowd Health. Mm-hmm. Went to the cardiologist. Cardiologist was basically, you know, did all the kind of the workup, and he's like, I see that you're uninsured. I was like, yeah, I'm uninsured. And we kind of joke at Crowd mm-hmm. Health, we're delightfully uninsured. Mm-hmm. You know, but this uninsured thing has this connotation of, you know, being a bad thing. And we're one of the few that's like, no, more people should be uninsured.
Yeah.
Because insurance is such a perverse type of incentive. So he said, great. So I got a 60% discount on that visit. So I think it ended up being like $149 or something like that for that cardiology visit. And so he's like, you should do a stress echo test. I was like, great, I'll go do a stress echo test. Mm. I got the stress echo test for, I think it was $149, something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you should go get a chest x-ray. I was like, great, I'll go get a chest x-ray. That was $100. So I got a primary care visit, a cardiology visit, a stress echo test, an x-ray of my chest. Oh, and I got some blood drawn too, all for under $500.
Wow.
Like that entire, and I had somebody who many Bitcoiners would know, he asked me to keep his name, you know, non or not public. But he's like, I just went and got a stress echo test and it was $6,000.
Wow.
So that one thing alone, that stress echo test, was $6,000. And I walked through this as a member of Crowd Health just so I could show people, one, how easy this is. Mm-hmm. You know, I had an internal person at Crowd Health who's my care advocate. I talked to her, this one person, every single time, which mm-hmm. is what you'll have and you have at Crowd Health and others have. You can text her, you can call her, you can do whatever you want. You know, there's mm-hmm. a number of ways to get a hold of her. She walked me through how I would do this. And I was like, man, it sucks that I have chest pain. But it's great that I have somebody who can walk alongside me mm-hmm. and it cost me $500, mm-hmm. anything. And in essence, what it was is I had an inflammation of my rib cage. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's easily, it's gone now
yeah.
From, you know, 3 or 4 months ago.
Wow.
And so I walked through that. It was so simple. I was like, man, this is beautiful. The other quick thing too, is the doctor said, hey, when you get your stress echo, what I would do is I would ask you to come back in to talk to me about it.
Mm-hmm.
But since you're uninsured, why don't I just give you a call? And so you won't have to pay for the visit. And I'm like, great. Huh. You know, and so like they were excited that yeah. I was a cash pay
right.
patient. And so they were actually doing things for me that weren't to, you know, massively overcharge the health insurance
right.
system, but to actually care for me
right.
as their patient, which I think that's the heart of most doctors.
Yeah.
And health insurance is the number one reason why doctors are currently leaving. They're getting burned out
yeah.
because of health insurance.
Yeah.
Is, you know, you have this little health insurance company sitting on your shoulder telling you right. what you can and can't do, say they'll pay you and then not pay you.
Yeah.
And they're just like, it's a breath of fresh air if you have somebody who's just going to come in and say, hey, I'm paying with the credit card.
Right.
It's
beautiful.
So I didn't even have to use the Crowd Health crowdfunding component of mm-hmm. that, because everything under $500 for a health event mm-hmm. is my responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I paid $500 for that. And man, I saved $500 a month using Crowd Health. So
right.
I was happy to
right, right. That's
so
great.
It was a cool, I wanted to walk through the entire experience as the CEO.
Yeah.
I can't manufacture a health event. This
right.
just happened to, you know, happen to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, fortunately the outcome was good.
That's cool to hear that they started dealing with you as an individual rather than trying, because he would have called you back in for that expensive appointment.
Just he would have charged me $300 for that appointment company. Or something.
Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, Wasabi Wallet. With Wasabi Wallet, you can receive, send, and store Bitcoin privately. In Wasabi Wallet, your transaction history and wallet balance are completely hidden. Wasabi Wallet is easy to use. All of its privacy features are built in by default, and it works with any amount of Bitcoin. Wasabi users can make CoinJoin transactions together with BTC Pay Server users or Trezor Suite users. For BTC Pay Server users, they can make payments directly inside of a CoinJoin. And for Trezor Suite users, you can make CoinJoins directly on a hardware wallet. These features result in fee savings and security improvements for both sets of users. So go to wasabiwallet.io today to download the state-of-the-art Bitcoin privacy wallet.
Now I'd like to tell you about our sponsor, Casa. Casa makes it simple to buy and secure your Bitcoin without wondering whether you're doing it right. Specifically, Casa provides a multi-key custody solution, which is by far the most secure way to custody your Bitcoin. Now, when I talk about Bitcoin being theft-proof money or inviolable private property, a multi-key custody model is exactly what I am talking about. Using multiple keys lets you maintain full control of your Bitcoin while also giving you redundancy in case you lose one of the keys. It's also the best way to secure your Bitcoin for inheritance planning purposes. So go to keys.casa, that's C-A-S-A, today to sign up and use discount code BREEDLOVE.
And it, again, back to the wastefulness and inefficiency. It's like the thing that can be solved with a phone call, he's instead going to do the in-person appointment just to bill. And if you just think about how much that accumulates in the system, yeah. It's like the whole thing is just a giant wasteful. And now when you go in to see a doctor, like most people's experience, mine in traditional healthcare is like the doctor spends 90 seconds with you, yeah. Right? You wait 3 hours, you see the doctor for
like
90
minutes or something. It's crazy. Like well, it's on the doctor side, they're trying to, with the insurance system, they're trying to maximize billing. And in the insurance side, I, as a consumer of healthcare, I think I'm getting screwed by health insurance, which we all do think we get screwed by our health insurance. And so I'm trying to extract as much value out of the system as possible, which is just this whole spiral of increasing costs.
Yeah.
Now think about that in terms of what we're talking about today. And you have a bunch of Bitcoiners who are all helping each other out.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have people who come back, and we had a Bitcoiner who had colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing he said was like, man, I don't want to screw the community. Like, will you help me walk through this so that, you know, I'm not, you know, overburdening the community? And like, you would never hear that within the health insurance space. Like, so people are starting to think about how it impacts other people within their community. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know, it changes the behavior, which has to be changed for this system to get right-sized.
Yeah, it's like reintroducing the humanness to healthcare or something.
Yeah.
Where we've abstracted it so far that it's just a numbers game, right? I used to work in healthcare software for a little bit, and so I was privy to some of these doctors, you know, closed door meetings, and the way they talked about healthcare was kind of disgusting, right? It's like how many procedures can we give per unit of time to get X number of revenue?
Yeah.
It's like, is anyone going to talk about how you actually make the patient better here? Like, it didn't come up very often. Let's say it was much more of a numbers business driven conversation.
Yeah. I was at my previous career. I was selling into health plans.
Yeah.
And so I was at the chief medical officer's office of one of the largest health plans in the country. And we were trying to talk to them about reducing the diabetics A1C. A1C is just a measure of average glucose over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So your average glucose over the last 6 months is your A1C in essence. And his response was, F them. They don't lose limbs or organs until they're in Medicare, right? So this is a commercial plan from a chief medical officer. And I'm like, really? Like, that's what a chief medical officer just told me of one of the biggest health plans on the planet? That's the way that some of these health plans think about their people internally. I'm not saying all health plan people are bad. All I'm saying is that we have become numbers and barcodes as opposed to human beings.
Yes.
You know, and so what we say is, you know, fund humans, not health insurance.
Mm.
Like, I'm funding you and your healthcare need, not this big insurance company where the CEO is making, you know, $20 or $30 or $40 million a year. Like, we're directly paying for each other's, you know, healthcare needs. And CrowdHealth doesn't touch any of that money.
Yeah.
So it goes from your account to their account.
Yeah.
I don't touch any of it. I touch that $50 subscription fee.
Right.
That's all I touch. So it's just a totally different way of thinking about doing this.
It's a great example too, because it's not to point fingers. It's not to say, oh, this is a bad medical director. It's, again, the incentives, right? There's an incentive to dehumanize or depersonalize when you're in this large medical industrial complex. I don't really know what else to call it, right? You're not looking at people as people. You're looking at rows on a spreadsheet, mm-hmm. right? And you're trying to optimize for a number. Whereas in a more communal model, you're actually the guy that's has the pathology is actually concerned about burdening the members with getting his
yeah.
payment. You know, like you is your entire, the way you see the world, the way you act in the world, in this case, the healthcare world, changes as a result of the incentive structure.
Totally.
And it's hard to overstate how powerful that is.
Yeah, totally. But the other thing too is you're right. It's all about incentives. And there's a couple other things that we do that I think motivate people to act appropriately. One is whenever I submit a health bill to the community, they get two things from me that they know about me or that bill. One is, how generous has Andy been to others in the community?
Mm-hmm.
So in the last, 10 times I've been asked to help other people, have I said yes or no?
Oh, right.
And so if I've said, no, right? Like, I've been a crappy member of the community, right? And back in the day when I got hurt, maybe not a whole lot of community members would gather around me yeah. if, I had treated them like
right.
right. the Hatfields aren't coming to the McCoys to help them out, right? Like, it just, you haven't been very good neighbors. And so we tell people how generous you've been. It's a reputation score.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we'd say is, hey, is your bill that you're submitting a reasonable bill for that procedure? And so the way that we look at that is saying, hey, if we can find an alternative provider that's within 20% mm-hmm. of that bill, then you're good to go. But if you want to go to the Mayo Clinic because you have a flu and you want to, send your bill to Robert for $5,000 when it should have been $250, like, you as a funder of that bill should know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we let you know, we give you a score on that bill to say, hey, this person actually like tried to, do some work to find a really good provider for this. And we do all the work on our end. Like, all you have to do is call us and let us know that you're looking for somebody. And we only do that for bills over $1,000, like decent sized
gotcha.
Bill. So if you go to primary care doc and it's like $225 versus mm-hmm. $150,
yeah.
we're actually like, great. Like that
yeah.
primary care doc is going to spend more time with you. We want to support them.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you go to the Mayo Clinic for a flu, like,
right.
come on, dude.
Like, right.
people shouldn't have to be paying for that.
Right.
So we've tried and create some incentive systems internally, too, to say, hey, just be a good actor.
Right.
Just
be prudent, right?
Just be prudent.
Yeah, yeah. yeah right. Prudent. Makes sense.
And given it's so easy, there's no reason not to be prudent.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
That's super cool. And then that handholding, that's a big, I imagine that's a big value add. I haven't gone through the process yet, knock on wood, haven't had any issues. Yeah. But the frustration of trying to find the right healthcare provider in my past experience has been pretty significant, right? Like, again, with it, you don't know how much does this cost. They can't tell you until they do it. And you're trying to compare. It's like, you can't compare because you can't get prices. So I can imagine having someone that you can communicate with that knows their way around the space is very helpful for yeah. members.
And knows the good docs in your,
yeah.
your area. That have a reputation for doing a really good job. I mean, I think that in itself, as opposed to just if you had health insurance, you'd go online, you'd type in, you're a provider or whatever cardiologist, mm-hmm. it would give you a list of cardiologists and you're like, okay, which one do I pick?
Yeah.
For us, you can actually call us and we say, hey, here's ones in the area that we know are good or that we've heard are good.
Yeah.
We're also allowing our members, we will hear shortly, to, if they go to a doc and that doc was really great, to mm-hmm. provide feedback for that doc. So if anybody else in the area, needed a doc that was similar, they have some feedback from somebody in the community. So my cardiologist, for example, in Austin, it wasn't a great one. Like, mm-hmm. so I'd probably right. go back. And he was actually super patient friendly.
Yeah.
Just his kind of medical background and training around inflammation wasn't good.
Right.
And so I will give that feedback to him,
yeah.
to them. So you have that all in one place. Again, trying to be able to find really good doctors is such a good value add for us.
That's super cool. Well, cool, man. I've kept you long enough, I think. So you're headed off to speak at Thank God for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
What are you talking about there?
Money is freedom. So it should be a good one. I'm up with Mark Moss and Zuby is going to be there.
Oh, cool.
Which will be fun to hear, what he has to say. I think I really enjoy him, and I know that he has done some shitcoinery in the past, but I think he has come to the Bitcoin side of...
Who's that, Zuby?
Zuby.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so he gets ripped on a lot, but he's a super good dude. I got a chance to talk to him a number of times. He's going to be at our happy hour tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
And I just think he stands for freedom.
Yeah.
Especially through some of this COVID nonsense. You know, he's one that's stood firm in his belief on some of these things. So I have tons of...
Great takes on Twitter.
And, great takes. Some of the best.
Yeah.
Some of the best. Yeah.
And I'm amazed. Like, he seems to be able to say things in a way that doesn't get him targeted or canceled or censored or whatever. But he's still kind of saying... He does... It's a skill. He's got a way of saying the thing without saying it too bluntly to get in trouble. And yeah, I've spent some time with him. He seems like a very, very cool dude.
He worries about getting canceled.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things too, where a lot of the industries, and especially within Bitcoin, there's a lot of tangential spaces in which we all play where it's very easy for us to get canceled. But what I've sensed from Bitcoiners is that we're willing to say it regardless of the repercussions.
Yeah.
You know, and in healthcare, we're going up against some of the largest companies on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, United Healthcare, CVS, Aetna, I think sixth and seventh largest companies, which, you know, could, if they wanted to, put some heat on folks like us.
Yeah.
But I think we need more people, especially within this Bitcoin community, to stand up and say, you know what, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't care what the financial ramifications are. I don't care, because we're on a mission here.
Yeah.
And one of the things I tell people starting new companies in Bitcoin or not in Bitcoin is find missionaries, not mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, find people who are so passionate about what you're doing with a goal of impacting human beings, you know, impacting our world, and have money as a secondary component of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I'm finding within the Bitcoin community is like, this is not necessarily about making a lot of money.
Yeah.
This is about a mission to say something is going awry here. We need to stand up regardless of whether we're canceled.
Yeah.
Man, I just dig that. You know,
yeah.
We can add that to the characteristics that you mentioned earlier is like people are willing to stand up and say enough is enough. Like,
well, it's truth telling, right?
Yeah,
and it's again, sure. There's this weird thing where like,
which is so countercultural right now, truth telling.
Countercultural. What did, maybe it was Orwell, when a society drifts so far from the truth, it starts to attack people. I'm butchering the quote now. Basically, when a society has moved so far from the truth, those who speak it are considered treasonous, effectively.
Yeah.
But there's this weird phenomenon with Bitcoin that I think we're all kind of dancing around. No one really understands how it works, but something about the attributes of good money tend to imprint themselves as attributes on the people that really embrace it. Doesn't mean you send a Bitcoin transaction that makes you more truthful.
Yeah.
But it's like you become an adherent or... you become studious of the rabbit hole and it actually starts to change you, right? Like it changes your time preference, changes your dietary habits. Maybe it changes your orientation towards having children or the community, whatever else. And although I don't think anyone can explain how that works, it definitely seems to work, right? You get more people that are just, what did Jordan Peterson say? He goes, you have to embrace truth no matter what. And then just accept that as the adventure of your life, whatever the consequences are.
Yeah.
Elon yesterday, I don't know about Elon. It's like ultimate troll. I don't know if good, bad. I don't know where he lands. But at least what he said, he's saying, I'm going to say whatever I want. Like, give me money, give me power. I don't care. I'm going to say what I want. Now, I don't know if he's convicted in saying that or not, but that's a good framing for it.
Yeah.
For Bitcoiners. It's like, we're just here. Gosh, it sounds overly grandiose, maybe. It's like we're trying to like save the human species in a way. It's like humans destroy themselves by creating fiat currency and all of the institutional bullshit that gets built up around it, healthcare being a big one, military being another big one, mainstream media being another big one, big pharma being another big one. And all of it, at least maybe not all of it, but a lot of it is rooted in this money. And so Bitcoiners are just people standing up saying, this is not good for my species, so I'm going to go against it no matter the cost. And I don't know, on this show, we push that envelope a little bit far.
I love it.
It's been YouTube that we've gotten a warning and a strike from for medical misinformation.
Yeah.
And you ask them what it is, They can't tell you.
Yeah.
They won't tell you. You appeal it. Like, what specifically did we say in this episode that violated your policy?
Yeah.
They don't tell you. Yeah. So there are dangers. There are risks. But I'm fully subscribed to this idea of just embrace the truth and enjoy the adventure of your life, wherever it may take you.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, I think that there is some... there's something that a lot of us believe in, and just in terms of like the biblical truth, there's just the innate truth that we are, when we are created, it is woven together within us. And, you know, Jesus in the Bible talks about money more than anything, you know, and he warns about the love of money, you know, and in essence, what we have done is built a system that the love of money is pervasive.
That's right.
And there is no checks on that. And therefore, we are, you know, printing trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars who are hurting the most vulnerable. It's not hurting me and you. I mean, it is in a way, but it's you and I are going to be fine.
Yeah.
Right? It is the people Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It is the people who are, you know, middle and lower class who are feeling this 7, 8, 9, more likely 14, 15, 16% inflations that now can't pay for food, now can't pay for housing, that now can't do these things. And it's like, take care of the most vulnerable within your population. And what are we doing? We're doing the exact opposite of that. Whereas the upper class is getting larger. Most of that money being printed over the last 3 or 4 years. Where has it gone? It's gone to the upper class, not to the folks. And we're now ripping away their money from them through this inflationary you know, process. And it's like, man, like, Bitcoin is the only way that I see to get around with that. And that's why I think I'm going to, you know, talk to the thank God for Bitcoin thing. It is the only way in which we're going to be able to keep people from being lured in by that love of money, and therefore a biblical standard. You know, some theologians will probably disagree with me on that, but well, I mean, I think it is very, very clear.
Yeah, I mean, you're about to go speak at Thank God for Bitcoin. I'm an investor in the media company. We co-authored the book. Like, there's a strong argument, right? It's honest weights and measured, honest weights and measures. I think it's also very telling that the one time we see Christ invoke like righteous anger in the entire Bible is against the money changers. And it's like, what are Bitcoiners standing against? The money changers, central bankers. The world is run by a deceptive institution, at the least. Could just leave it at that. But we have to follow that example, right? It's ancient wisdom, if you will. So I know you got to go. I know you got to go speak at this thing. We could probably go down this rabbit hole for a long time.
For sure. Thanks for having me, and it's been fun.
Thank you for doing this. Where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, if you're interested in this lightning component of what we're doing, you know, we even need more Bitcoiners to support Bitcoin companies. You know, go to joincrowdhealth.com/lightning because we'd love your involvement in that. You can find us, Join Crowd Health, on Twitter is our most active. You can find me, Schoonover, Andy is my Twitter handle. So would love for you to join us there.
Awesome. We will link to all that in the show notes. Andy, thank you again, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.